This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Thank you for joining us for our Radio Main Street all across North Dakota. And today we're going to start our show talking about a new podcast from Meg Luther Lindholm. She's been a contributor to Prairie Public before. She produced a series called Stand Up North Dakota about school bullying years ago, and more recently, Journeys Through Justice about incarceration in North Dakota. But today, Meg, you join us to talk about Uplifted. Describe your podcast for our listeners.
Hi, Doug, and everyone. Yes, I have just recently started a new podcast from home in this era of COVID quarantine or stay-at-home time. I needed something to do, and so decided to create this podcast, which I'm calling Uplifted. And really, the way I describe it is a look at personal and global problems through a spiritual lens. So what can we do to try to make ourselves and our lives better and more in accordance with what I think are universal values of respect, equality, fairness, and really living our lives compassionately according to the golden rule? That seemed to me something that I felt I wanted to hear, and so I decided to create it.
Again, the podcast is called Uplifted, and it's a mix of art and information and wisdom, I think is a fair way to put this. Tell us about the piece we're going to hear today.
So, in keeping with the times that we're living in, these days of COVID, which are so difficult and challenging for so many of us, I call this particular episode The Struggle to Juggle, meaning we, many of us, are trying to take care of our kids if we have kids. A lot of summer activities have been canceled, so we have kids at home, and how do we keep them busy? How do we keep our own lives going? If we've lost a job, how do we find a new job? Or if we're working, how do we keep up with the demands of the jobs we have? And so really, I see so many of us in this place of just trying to keep up with everything and feeling overwhelmed. And what can we do to try to reduce the stress and the feelings of anxiety of this time that we're living in?
So how often do you expect to produce a podcast?
Ha! As often as my kids and my other responsibilities will let me. It's really hard. I'm just always squeaking in a few minutes here and there. It's very hard to find the blocks of time that I personally thrive on to do the creative work that I do. So that is really one of the biggest challenges for me, is finding a sort of concentrated periods of time. My husband and I are trying to work out our schedules to give each other breaks and time to do the things that we need to do for ourselves and our children. And, you know, I think all of us are sort of in one way or another having to recreate and reinvent our lives. And it can be very overwhelming. And that really is what this episode speaks to, is that sense of overwhelm and how do we deal with it.
It features Jesse Veeder, North Dakota singer-songwriter, Aram Mitchell, a writer and wilderness guide, and Dr. Catherine Perlman, a licensed social worker. So without further ado, here's Meg Luther Lindholm's Uplifted.
So life in this age of COVID is still hard. Even though places are reopening, there's still a lot of apprehension and a lot that we're still trying to juggle from home. A lot of us are still dealing with the pressure of taking care of kids and either trying to find a job or keep up with the demands of the jobs we have. Either way, there's a lot on our plates and a lot of us are still feeling overwhelmed.
I'm like any mom working from home right now, any parent working from home right now. I wake up in the morning, we're like, I'm going to have a schedule, right? We're going to have breakfast and we're going to have, you know, some quiet time where I can work, and then mate, we'll have lunch and we'll go outside. And then in between there somewhere, I'm supposed to be getting some work done.
Jesse Veeder is like a lot of parents who are struggling to raise their kids and manage their jobs. She's got two young daughters, ages 2 and 4. She's also juggling several jobs. She's a newspaper columnist. She does web design work. Plus, she helps her parents with their cattle ranch that's been in the family for generations. She's got her hands more than full.
What we try to do is morning, kind of cuddle, breakfast. I sit down at my computer, hopefully get maybe an hour of work done while they play and fight. And I have to intervene every, 5 to 10 minutes and tell them to quit fighting. Then we have a little lunch. We go outside. It's nap time, rest time. I get a good solid, hopefully hour and a half to 2 hours of uninterrupted time to really attend to some of the things that I'm working on right now, or not planning events, not planning concerts, trying to finish my album.
In addition to everything else, at her core, Jessie Veeder is a musician, a singer-songwriter. But to do music, she needs time alone, time away from everyone and everything else, time to find the creative inspiration that fuels her music. Which fortunately she gets when her husband comes home at the end of the day and he can be the one taking care of their two young daughters. That's when Jessie can get away to walk the land she has loved her whole life, on the edge of the North Dakota Badlands, which if you haven't seen them, you should. They are stunning. Rocky layers formed into buttes of reddish-brown earth that roll in expansive waves as far as the eye can see. And it is here, in nature, where Jessie finds a lot of the inspiration she needs to write her songs. Like this one, Raining.
Sun beats down, turning my pale skin brown. And I have been cold for months. I turn my face up.
That song is just about, ranch living, when the sky opens up and changes your plans and sends you inside and gives you a moment to breathe, which I think is very fitting during this time, where we are asked to do nothing but sit back and control what we can control and leave the rest to God. And that's what that song is about. That's been a saving grace for me, is those walks. Get outside, clear my head, be by myself. It's literally the only time I get to myself. And I think that's important. I know it's always been important for my mental health to get out and get moving, even more so now.
So there's a writer named Aram Mitchell. He's actually a wilderness tour guide as well as a writer. He writes from a personal perspective about problems that we're really all dealing with. And in this case, it's about how do we keep the lives that we were living pre-COVID going while also reinventing our lives. And he writes about it in an essay called The Muscle of Our Collective Spirit.
The weight of the world right now is not familiar. It's hard to know what's required. There's a new variety of overwhelm, as for some the nature of work shifts and risks increase. Others are losing opportunities to work. The landscape of home life is terra nova, and waves of uncertainty lap and recede, leaving blank the etchings of our plans previously drawn in the sand. I don't know how each of us ought to reorient to our new shifting realities, but I'm confident in our human ability, our propensity even, to gradually, day by day, together, muscle our way into knowing and being in and renewing our world.
Sometimes, to just be in the world, one has to let go of all the expectations that we normally place on ourselves and our kids and our lives. I recently read a blog post by a licensed social worker named Catherine Perlman. She works with a lot of families. And this is what she had to say about life at home with her own kids. I say yes to almost everything. Can I make a banana cake with peanut butter frosting? Can I take apart your old computer? Can I dye my hair? Can I shave it off? Can I watch more television? Can I play more video games? Yes, yes, yes. Yes to anything that isn't dangerous and can be construed as an activity or fun or relaxing or just time-consuming. My kitchen is a disaster. The dishes pile up faster than I can blink. Staying above water is such a fine line. I've had to stop caring about the way my house typically looks. Letting go feels better than trying to live up to standards that feel not worth the effort right now. Catherine Perlman wrote this for the Family Coach blog, which she created as a way to help parents learn how to be better parents. And sometimes that means just letting go.
First of all, these are not normal times. And so we can't have normal expectations on ourselves or our kids or our families for how this is going to go. So it's normal with the current situation to have more crying, more tantrums from kids or parents, to have more disorganization, more feelings, just a lot more unusual behaviors going on at home right now. And that's okay. And I think if we can understand that this is not our typical lives and it shouldn't look typical, it feels less stressful in some ways. We're all struggling and suffering and trying to get through the best way that we know how. So for some people, the best way to get through is to bake or create art or do projects with their kids. And for other families, honestly, it's television and video games.
The good news is that this new normal won't last forever. We don't know exactly what's going to replace it or whether we'll go back to what life used to be, but it isn't going to stay like this forever.
So if you know that things can get back into place later, then it's easier to relax now and say, you know what? I need my kids to be on the TV right now for me, for my sanity, to survive.
And it helps to stop and say, you know what? I need a timeout.
And I think that is exactly what parents need to do. We need to pay attention to our own feelings so that we don't act out on them in negative ways with our kids or our partners. So for me, I can tell when I'm getting thin, you know, I can tell when my nerves are really fraying. And that's a point for me to tap out with my husband and say, like, I need to have an hour in my room by myself, or I need to go for a walk, or I need to cook in the kitchen, but not be bothered. Or even if you're a single parent, to say to your kids, like, this is an hour of screen time or quiet time, or everybody goes to the room and does whatever they want time. But I know that I'm going to need a little bit of time out.
And this relaxing our normal standards by taking a break, by saying yes to things that we wouldn't normally say yes to, is also about trying to maintain consistency with our children. If we say, no, you can't do that, and then our children argue with us when we're already very tired and we turn around and say, oh, okay, go ahead, then that kind of mixed message tells our kids that it's okay to argue and argue and argue because eventually we'll give in. And Catherine says that's actually worse than just taking your fatigue into account and going along with things that you might not normally say yes to. Again, these are not normal times. We have to give ourselves and our kids a break.
If you don't say no, there's no problem. Just say yes. The kid wants more TV. You don't feel like dealing. Just say yes. There's no problem with that. You're reinforcing nothing then. The problem is if you say no or you try to implement something, and then there's the whining, complaining, and tantruming, and then you just give in. That's what we're reinforcing the behavior. And also, now is a great time to ignore all annoying behaviors, all tantruming behaviors, you know, just to give ourselves a little bit of a break from feeling like we have to discipline everything, or we're constantly trying to improve our kids or teach them a lesson. You know, sometimes we just have to let things go. And now is a great time to just let things go.
And we have to be willing to let go of the expectations we have for our own lives as well. Or maybe that means altering the way we normally live, doing things differently. That's okay too.
We need to have some realistic expectations. You know, for people who have work that they have to get done, you know, it might have to be done in a very non-traditional way. For me, you know, I might take a nap at 9 p.m. and then work till 3 in the morning when there's no, you know, nobody's around, but then I'll sleep in the next day. That works in my house. Other people might have to find ways, you know, that works in their house. And for them, it really may be more television for their kids, or having younger kids taking on more things that they wouldn't normally do, like cooking or baking or watching younger siblings. And in other times, maybe this wouldn't be okay for us. But nowadays, it's going to have to be okay. Our houses are going to be messier. We're not going to clean in the same way we might normally clean. And that's just going to have to be okay. And I think if we can let go of some of what's supposed to be and what normally is and typically is, we can feel a lot better about what's actually going on.
That was Catherine Perlman, creator of the Family Coach blog. Sometimes it's just impossible to keep work and home life separate. Like just as I was about to record this, my daughter walked into the little makeshift recording studio I have in my bedroom closet. The same thing happened when I was interviewing Jesse Veeder, the singer-songwriter who lives in western North Dakota. We were talking about how creative her kids are, how her kids love her music and love to dance, and she writes songs for them. And almost as if on cue, her little daughter Edie, 4 years old, tapped on the door and walked in.
Hi, Edie, I'm on the phone. If you sit here, you have to be quiet, okay? Okay. I'm in her room. Do you like to sing with me? Can you say yes?
Yeah.
What's your favorite song? Maybe Tell Her Piggies Fly? Do you like that one?
I know. Oh, we can't get them to be quiet during the day, but when you want them to talk, they don't have words.
Despite whatever frustrations Jesse feels now as a parent trying to raise two young daughters while working, Jesse wrote the music that you're hearing at a time when she didn't have children and wanted desperately to be a mother. She says that she tried to visualize her children, and in that effort came this song, For You, Child.
I dreamed you on the prairie, on mountaintops and oceans wide. And I loved you before I met you. I sang you quiet lullabies. I dreamed your hair gold like your daddy. I dreamed hands capable and strong.
That song is about wanting a family and wanting and envisioning these children that I could see but didn't know if it was ever going to happen. My husband and I had been trying to become parents for 2 or 3 years. I think we had suffered about 3 or 4 miscarriages, and we just could not get our family started.
wish you nothing but bright blue skies.
And now it means even more now that I have these two little daughters, and you know, they're making life so much more interesting and magical and wonderful and challenging and infuriating and all of the things, right?
Up on his shoulders, on a horse.
Revisiting that song, they're in that song, and it's very special to me.
In the garden, and I wrote you in a song. I wish you singing, I wish you laughter, I wish you free and running wild. I wish you nothing but bright blue skies and warm breezes for you, child. And I know you'll have worries, and I know trouble comes tonight. And in the morning, I'll be waiting just to see your eyes.
Should we sing Piggies Fly? This is a song that I wrote when Edie was a little baby, and I would rock her to bed at night. And it just sort of, it became our lullaby for both girls. Okay, sit up straight. Okay, ready? You have blue eyes, I have brown eyes.
Your hair is blonde and mine has curls. You are small and I'm your mama. You're my beautiful baby girl. So dance and sing and twirl around. Jump until you touch the sky. Don't worry about a thing, sweet darling. I love you till the piggies fly.
Good job. Good job.
This is Aram again with a prayer for us as we navigate uncertain times. As we cross the threshold of each new day, may we find strength in the confidence that we're moving together. May we rest assured that yesterday's unknown will be a little more familiar tomorrow. And may we remember that right now, we just have to live today.
You've been listening to Uplifted, a podcast to raise your spirits in these troubled times. If you like this episode, I hope you'll share it with your circles. I want to thank Aram Mitchell, Jesse Veter and her daughter Edie, and Dr. Catherine Perlman. You can find Catherine's Family Coach blog at thefamilycoach.com. You can find Jesse Veter's music at jessevetermusic.com. I'm Meg Luther Lindholm.
You can find Meg's podcast, Uplifted, at prairiepublic.org. Select Listen, then Podcasts for an alphabetical listing of our podcasts. Coming up on Main Street, a Harvest Public Media report about research to increase productivity without adverse effects. Then Main Street Eats with Sue Belcom. And a Plains Folk essay with Tom Ezern. First, the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. As of our 3:30 p.m. Newscast this afternoon, much of the central and southern areas of the Red River Valley are under a severe thunderstorm watch until 9 p.m. this evening as severe storms form and creep from west to east. Bill Barrett is a forecaster with the National Weather Service in Grand Forks. He says people in these areas can expect strong winds and large hail.
The main threat is hail, actually. Not that wind is not, but the winds might be in the 60 to 70 mile an hour gusts, as opposed to anything higher at this point. That's what we're thinking. But the hail would be the primary concern at this point, and we are kind of going up to ping pong or perhaps even some golf ball size hail, which is, you know, about an inch and three quarters in diameter would be the golf ball. So that's what we're kind of setting the top edge of what the hail size might be at this point, and still looking for reports as time goes on.
Barrett says this afternoon a lot of the activity is in the Central Valley area and should be the case throughout the early afternoon. He says anyone living in these areas should be watching weather reports and have a plan to take indoor shelter if needed. 32 new individuals have tested positive for COVID-19 in North Dakota, bringing the statewide positive total to 3,393. The positive results were from a pool of 2,967 tests for a positive rate of 1.1%. Cass and Grand Forks counties each had 7 new cases, and there were 4 new cases in Ward County. Burley, McKenzie, Richland, Stark, and Williams counties each had 2 new cases, and Morton, Rolette, Sargent, and Walsh counties each had 1 new case. There are currently 25 people hospitalized with the novel coronavirus. There have been 222 total hospitalizations. There have been 3,064 recoveries and 78 deaths. This leaves 251 active confirmed cases in the state. And ground has been broken for the new Valley City State University Center for the Arts. VCSU President Alan LaFave says this facility is an important milestone for the university.
And we know that this facility will serve as a strong, strong central piece of our campus and our community in moving our university and institution forward.
The $32 million state-of-the-art facility will include a 350-seat performance hall and a 100-seat recital hall and choral room, a band room, a piano and computer lab, and a recording and production studio. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
When you take that social distancing walk or do chores around the house, I mean, you've got plenty of time for that, right? Put on your earbuds and immerse yourself in public radio content made just for you.
Hey, y'all, it's Sam Sanders, and welcome to NPR One.
Hourly newscasts from NPR and Prairie Public, your favorite podcasts, and your new favorite podcast. Plus, stories from Planet Money and Hidden Brain, coverage of the arts, and something we really need to be paying attention to these days, health and science. NPR One is personalized public radio content tailored to your interests. But you'll also hear up-to-the-minute news you need to know, like on the coronavirus.
That personalized balance is the heart and soul of NPR One.
It's just like the radio, but under your control. Download the NPR One app and listen.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Concern about climate change and the environmental damage caused by large-scale agriculture have researchers looking for ways to increase productivity without further harm. Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer looks at a network of research sites across the country that, over the past decade, have started combining local data into a national understanding of what might need to change.
On a windy June day, microbiologist Tom Moorman lifts a metal lid and reveals a collection of bottles, tubes, meters, and cables in a shallow pit on the edge of a farm field.
So you see in those bottles, labels 17, 18, 19, and 22.
Moorman works for the Agricultural Research Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Ames, Iowa. He explains that each bottle collects water running off one specific plot. His research team grows corn and soybeans. About half the plots are business as usual, planted, fertilized, harvested, and so forth, the way a local farmer might do it. But the others are what Moorman and his colleagues call aspirational.
So we have two basic ones that we're looking at here. Rye cover crops, which we've looked at for quite some time. But this particular treatment, instead of rye, we're trying to grow winter camelina.
Camelina is an oil seed that can be planted in the fall and harvested in the summer, even as soybeans are growing in the rows around it. Moorman's looking at whether the camelina helps reduce nutrient runoff. He measures that in the water collected in those plastic bottles. He's also hopeful camelina or some other option could ultimately offer traditional Midwest farmers a third cash crop in addition to corn and soybeans.
Agricultural scientists in the Midwest have spent a lot of time thinking about another big third crop, and we haven't come up with it exactly yet.
Moorman's team looks at row crops and water quality with additional locations in Minnesota and Wisconsin. They're one site in the long-term agroecosystem research network, which has 18 sites across the country. The overarching goal is to figure out how agriculture can scale up to feed more people while also reducing negative environmental impacts. And that takes time. In Michigan, the Kellogg Biological Station has been studying the impact of no-till farming for so long, Nick Haddad says the results are conclusive. Not turning over the land before planting is beneficial when you do it year after year.
If we had stopped at any point in that 30 years, we wouldn't know the extent that a less intense cropping system has on yield.
Plus, Haddad said no-till leads to higher soil moisture and keeps more carbon in the ground. He says the results likely would hold true on 20 to 40% of upper Midwest cornfields. But the agricultural landscape looks different in Nebraska, where there's more livestock and less water. The Platte River High Plains Aquifer site of the Agroecosystem Network has records on groundwater, pesticide residue, productivity.
We have several long-term data sets. Several of them goes back to the 70s, few goes back to the 40s.
Tala Awada of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln is a co-leader of the site.
The groundwater fluctuation goes back to the early 1900s.
These data have helped land managers advise local farmers for decades. Now, using the same business-as-usual versus aspirational framework, the whole research network is exploring water quantity and quality, greenhouse gas emissions, and other environmental impacts across many agricultural landscapes. The coordinated effort aims to illustrate how the different regions are related.
We are all facing changes in the environment, changes in climate that one of us cannot capture.
USDA's Teferi Tsagaye is the national coordinator of the network. He says with a growing global population and no additional arable land, sustainably increasing production is a must.
We have one earth, basically. So you have to increase productivity with the same land that we are currently producing.
Researchers hope their work will demonstrate viable ways for farmers to do that. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a reporting collaboration that looks into America's farm and rural issues. Main Street Eats is next.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by the Bush Foundation, investing in great ideas and the people who power them. In Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and the 23 Native nations that share that same geography. Learn more at bushfoundation.org.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, joined now by Ashley Thornburg and Sue Belcom. It's time for Main Street Eats.
Sue, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
You sent a note that you want to talk about pineapple weed.
Yeah, the weirdest thing. Yeah. You know what's so weird about this is it's something that I have been around my entire life. I had no idea that it was called pineapple weed because, as we all know, pineapples don't grow in North Dakota very well, do they now?
I have noticed.
So when I'm out walking, like through an old farmyard or, you know, cruising through Fredonia and just thinking about all my memories growing up, if I come across a patch of pineapple weed and you step in it, you always know it because the fragrance is so intense and so familiar because it was medicinal. And my mother used to harvest it all the time. And it is also known as wild chamomile.
Okay. Oh, I have some of that. I didn't know it's also called pineapple weed.
So when you step on it, Sue, does it smell like pineapple or chamomile?
It smells like chamomile, which is why I am confused about the pineapple.
It's really
weed
wild
thing.
Pineapple. That one doesn't make any sense.
No, and you know, I have been trying. There's other kinds of chamomile, like there's a German chamomile and one other variety that are more cultivated.
Roman, there we go.
They're more cultivated, and I tried growing. I tried so hard to get chamomile because I love the tea to grow in my wildflower bed. And lo and behold, nothing. And then one day I'm walking in the driveway going, "What? Wow, I can smell chamomile." And sure enough, it does not like to grow in the wildflower bed where the soil is semi taken care of.
It's wild.
I know. So it's in my driveway amongst the rocks.
So does this have all of the medicinal qualities, or can you make tea out of it and all that stuff?
Oh, it is best ever tea. And my mother used to give it to us when we were sick, like we had a cold or a stomach ache. It calms your stomach down, and it works as a mild sedative. You know that when you can't sleep, they say drink some chamomile tea. Yeah. Well, if you're out walking around, it is a tiny little plant. It grows very close to the ground, and it grows in large patches. It gets about 5 inches tall, 4 to 5 inches tall, and it has that little round bulb at the top of its plant, and then it has little feathery stems, and you can clip that off. And here is a rule for harvesting wild. Please, 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 people, do not dig up everything you see. One out of every three plants should be harvested. The rest should be left to reproduce, or you will run out of wild herbs eventually, because they won't be reseeding themselves. Another thing you might want to do is not tell people where you're harvesting.
Just like mushroom hunting. If I tell you, I have to kill you.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So you can actually harvest the stems, the leaves, and the flowers, and make tea out of them immediately. But I like to pick it and dry it, because then it will keep all winter long.
Do you drink this tea for the flavor, or is there some medicinal quality that you like to get
from
it?
I love the flavor, but it's also good for colicky children. Like I said before, it kind of has a calming effect. It's good for your liver. It encourages sweating, which helps to lower a fever. And then, you know, it works as a mild sedative, and it's just really good. But you can to drink. It's really good to drink, but you can also use it for inflamed skin. You know, like if you have a rash or something from either heat or, in my case, ticks. I'm not kidding you. I've been bit by so many ticks this year, and I have.
Well, you be careful. Ticks.
I've developed,
problematic.
Allergic reaction to these things, and so I get rash all the time around the bite. And we don't have as many of the Lyme disease ticks here on the western part of the state. I don't think they like the warmer weather we have, because they don't like the heat. We're waiting for it to get hot, then they'll disappear. But you can make a balm out of it to soothe your skin. You can also, it also said that you can plant it amongst your garden flowers or your garden vegetables to ward off some diseases that might occur in your garden. And you can breathe the steam in. You know, like when we were kids, my mom used to create very hot steam baths and then put a towel over your head, and you would inhale chamomile or Vicks vapor rub, which is very popular. And that helps clear your sinuses out. And then, of course, you've seen chamomile shampoos and or conditioners.
Yeah, it's so really good for blondies.
Yes, that's what I hear. Although people keep saying I'm more of a redhead. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't see that myself. But I'm trying to go all natural with hair care. I just somehow one day said to myself, it just can't be good to be coloring your hair with toxic chemicals, because that's like close to your brain. And I need mine for another 30 years. So I would recommend finding some. And you know what? You should ask your grandmother, because I'll bet she knows where there's a patch of chamomile on the old farmstead.
Just yesterday. So I have a patch. I've noticed I have lamb's quarters, also known as wild spinach, and I have chamomile that just came in without me doing anything at all alongside my driveway. And I've been harvesting it and using it. And then all of a sudden I look out the door yesterday, and I live near some flood buyout property, and the city leveled all of it. And sprayed it with grass that they're going to have to mow and they can't eat.
Be careful about where you're harvesting things, because you do not want to ingest any extra chemicals from people who spray. And we have had drift issues this year with the heavy, wet weather and those awful winds we had earlier this spring. And we've lost a lot of garden plants because of chemical drift, and it's heartbreaking.
Well, let's get back to how you find this wild chamomile or this pineapple weed, because it sounds like you can't just throw some seeds out. You've got to actually find it.
Right. You could cultivate the stuff that you could buy seeds for, but I never had luck with that. But you have to do like I do, and you walk with your nose to the ground.
I notice basically. It all the time alongside driveways, in yep. cracks of sidewalks, into meadows. I think a good sign to look for is if a lawn
dry,
is starting.
Rocky soil.
Yeah, dry, rocky soil, but also if a lawn is starting to look a little bit more natural, if there's a fair amount of clover in there, I see those two often growing sort of close together, not like immediately.
But it is out there.
It looks like maybe like a really tiny fern with light yellow
yes.
blossoms, like a
yes.
like the tiniest daisy and the tiniest fern.
Because it has
a baby.
teeny tiny leaves. The,
yeah.
the German and the Roman chamomile have a little bit larger daisy-shaped
yeah.
Bloom. But these have teeny tiny, and they're pretty green.
They're adorable,
You
yeah.
know, that's why you can find them easier, because they're really kind of a fluorescent, limey-colored, greenish yellow. And like I said, I my entire life walked around and looked
just
down at things when I'm walking, and that's the best way to find it. And
yeah.
when you find a patch, it's going to be there, or probably has been there for a really long time.
Yeah, Doug, I don't think you'll have any trouble finding it. It's kind of one of those, as soon as you hear it, now you'll just see it all the time. It's really easy to forage.
Well, I'll go online to make sure I've got an image of it
yes.
in my head.
Right.
And then I'll look around the house, because I think I might have some of this ferny stuff with these little flowers on it.
Pinch it and rub a little on your fingers and smell it. You'll know right away that you're right on the target there.
Yeah.
And just so that I know the recipe, how do I make the tea?
Actually, you just harvest a couple plants so that you have enough to fill your tea ball or your teapot, and then pour boiling water. We don't like hot water. We like boiling water, and let it steep, and then add a little bit of honey. Honey is a complimentary flavor to chamomile. And if you harvest it to dry, you know that you always pick herbs, and you can tie them up and hang them in a dark, well ventilated area for them to dry. Don't dry them out in the sun. It actually seeps all the good stuff out of it. Or lay them flat on a screen and put them underneath your table in the entryway or someplace where no one's going to get into them. And then you can just bag them up or put them in a jar and put them in your cupboard, and you'll have wonderful medicinal tea when cold and flu season comes around in the fall.
Would chamomile be at all like dandelions, where once it starts to blossom, the greens get a little bitter?
Nope. I have never found that it ever really changes its, and it just seems to continually bloom. You know, it's like once it's dead, it dries up and goes away. but otherwise, it's pretty much there all the time.
We check in with Sue Balcom from Main Street Eats every week. It's always a pleasure, Sue.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure for myself.
On Prairie Public Primetime TV tonight.
I was born to the beat of a bad habit.
Hey, folks, I'm Kendra.
And I'm Kansas.
And we are the
Jensen
Sisters,
right here on the Prairie Musician Set.
Yeah, we are so excited to play some good old country music, so make sure you tune in.
That's right. See you there.
Watch Prairie Musicians tonight at 8:30 Central, 7:30 Mountain on Prairie Public.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting arts programming here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. Tom Ezern is a distinguished professor of history at North Dakota State University. He revels in the details and nuance that emerge from the search for bits of history covered by the dust of time. For example, today's Plainsfolk essay about a folk song offers a look at the painstaking process that results in a fascinating look at times past.
Hoorah for Emmons County, the land of the free, the home of the grasshopper, bedbug, and flea. I sing loud its praises, I sing loud its fame, while starving to death on a government claim. If you are a little nutty about folklore, You might recognize this song, but you're thinking there's something wrong about the way I'm singing it. The song, set to the tune of a traditional jig, The Irish Washerwoman, is commonly rendered as The Lane County Bachelor. Sometimes it's called Starving to Death on a Government Claim, because it details the trials and troubles of a pitiful fellow trying to prove up a homestead claim on the plains in Lane County, Kansas. Except I'm here to tell you today that the earliest known published text of this standard prairie folk song, known only since this week when I found it in the Emmons County Record of September 21st, 1894, comes to us indeed from Emmons County, North Dakota, more specifically from the southern part of the county around Westfield. The singer who situated the song in Emmons was one George Reichman, who began his stanzas like this. George Reichman's my name, and a bachelor I am. I'm keeping old batch on an elegant plan. You'll find me out west in Westfield's old plain, starving to death on a government claim. The authors of folk songs often are anonymous, or at best obscure, but in this case, the originator of our song identifies himself in the first line, and he can be traced. I have documentation on George Reichman from the Land Patent Index of the Bureau of Land Management, from manuscript census returns, from grave records, and from short news articles about him. Reichman, as was common on the homesteading frontier, was no lone eagle. He had two brothers and other relations who also settled nearby. They all hailed from Ontario, Canada, and entered the United States in 1887. George Reichman was born in 1861, and so when his song was published, he was about 33 years old. And unlike his brothers, he was single, an important element in the song. In the final chorus, he declares his intent to go to Ontario and get me a wife and live on corn dodgers the rest of my life. Well, he didn't. Instead, he married a woman from South Dakota, with whom he had several children. The evidence indicates Reichman succeeded as a farmer, for he received federal patents to a homestead, a timber claim, and a preemption claim paid for with cash. Sometime in the 1920s, he relocated his family to California, where he continued farming until his death in 1937. All versions of The Lane County Bachelor, A Homesteader's Lament, Starving to Death on a Government Claim, or whatever you call it, comprise multiple stanzas packed with hardships and annoyances. Bachelor life, bad food, ragged clothing, rattlesnakes, grasshoppers, bedbugs, fleas, heat, cold, drought, and poverty. The Reichman version, appropriately for North Dakota, is the only one that mentions mosquitoes. In the final stanza, Reichman allows, "As for myself, I'll no longer remain to starve to death on a government claim." But in real life, he does. Remain, I mean, and not starve. So the song is a spoof. The hardships may be real, but the singer, in fact, is persisting and prevailing, as does the song, which becomes an ironic classic of folk literature. More on that in a future essay.
That's historian Tom Ezert. Here's more history from Dakota Datebook.
This is Dakota Datebook for June 25th, celebrating the 100th year since the passage of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote. Written and voiced by Sarah Walker.
After the passage of the Federal Suffrage Amendment on June 4th, 1919, Carrie Chapman Catt, president of the National Women's Suffrage Association, sent out a multitude of requests for governors to call special sessions for the purpose of ratifying the amendment. Governor Lynn J. Fraser of North Dakota was adamant that this wasn't necessary and, in fact, would be an unnecessary and expensive cost, although he did also note that if a special session was called, the amendment would be among the first matters brought up and that he was confident of its almost unanimous ratification. Though he did not show any desire to call a special session, it was tentatively considered a possibility since the 16th Legislative Assembly had adjourned in March. Even in February, some thought had been put into the likelihood, as the Assembly kept to a schedule that allowed them to end earlier than necessary so that they could retain days for a special session which Governor Fraser had declared necessary. One of these necessary reasons may have resulted from a referendum election that was set up following the session. At this point, the governor, the attorney general, and many in the state legislature were members of the Nonpartisan League. During the session, Nonpartisan Leaguers had passed many of their party's bills, including the Industrial Commission Bill, which enacted that an industrial commission hold and operate all public utilities in North Dakota, including elevators, warehouses, flour mills, the Bank of North Dakota, the Home Building Association, coal mines, and any other utilities which any future legislature may decide upon. The Grand Forks Herald said, "The Nonpartisan League gang is now conspiring to get control of our state. Government, resources, public press, schools, money, and industry." The Bismarck Tribune noted that if the bill failed in the referendum election, the state would be left with a mill and elevator association without any machinery for its operation. The Tribune said, "It is a foregone conclusion that such a contingency would result in the immediate reassembling of the 16th legislature in extraordinary session." Governor Fraser set the referendum election for June 26th. Earlier than expected and creating difficulties for those who opposed those bills, though the debating and persuading was active that June. Despite pressure to squash this and other related bills, they did pass the referendum election, meaning no special session was yet required, and the 19th Amendment would have to wait for another opportunity. This is Sarah Walker.
This series is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota and the North Dakota Women's Suffrage Centennial Commission, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Critics of William Barr say he's doing the bidding of President Trump. DOJ whistleblowers argue political pressure influences decisions. The Attorney General responds tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Thank you for joining us today for Main Street. And a reminder that as we broadcast across North Dakota, we also stream around the world from prairiepublic.org. And after the broadcast, you can find any Main Street program at prairiepublic.org. Friday on our show, John Harris visits with Governor Doug Burgum. There's a lot to talk about in an excerpt from the Prairie Pulse television show. Then News Director Dave Thompson will join us for our weekly news chat. And Matt Olin will review the new Spike Lee film, The Five Bloods, which until theaters reopen is available on Netflix. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Friday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.